Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday. This is Here Be Monsters Radio. I'm Gwen Berry. With me today are Jack Judell, Wayne Johnson. We have a great guest tonight, guys. And gals and whoever else is listening. Eleanor Goldfield is with us. She's also published a brand new book that I hope we get to talk about called, oh my gosh,
Paradigm Lost.
Paradigm Lost, yeah. And I'm trying to figure out where that's coming from, guys. Gee, I'm sorry. And it's fun.
We got some artifacts in the background there. I don't know where they're coming from, but it happens.
Eleanor, welcome. Welcome back. And thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
But first of all, how's it going? The book is new, Paradigm Law. When did you get your first copies of it?
I first held a copy when I got to Sweden in late June. So it's published through a good friend of mine's publishing company in Stockholm, a very small, mostly philosophical publishing company, which actually works out really well. So I had my first release event in Sweden, so the book is available in Europe as well, and then had it shipped over to the States, where I now have several copies in my living room, aka my stock house.
I gotta tell you, I'm so impressed by not just what you've written down and all the lessons defined in it, all the thought, but the way you've laid this out, it is a well-published book. This production is a wonderful book, from cover to the pages to the. And so my hat's off to your Swedish publisher, because they did a beautiful job of this. And did you lay it out?
Well, actually, I have to give props not just to the publisher, but also to the printer in Poland, and actually to my mom, who designed the book, and she's a graphic designer and has worked in publishing for a really long time, so she knew all that stuff about, you know, what kind of colors to use and what the words for the paper thickness and things that I don't understand. So it was really luck of the biological draw, I suppose, that she was able to help, and she actually designed the whole book as well. So how you see the book laid out, where the art actually interacts with the words, that was her doing. So,
well, hats off to your mom, Eleanor, and I want to mention it's a very, very good quality paper you're using in that book. It is just thick. That book was made to last. It's kick the tires. It's going to be around for a few decades.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, after the apocalypse, it'll be Keith Richards and my book left. So,
well, it's not just, I mean, the design, the layout, everything from the fonts that she chose to use, and I mean, everything is. It emotionally draws you in with your eyes, even as you're just looking to begin to read. So you tell your mom that I think she's magnificent. I'm so very impressed with how this is done. Also, the content is pretty freaking, it's fucking awesome. It is wonderful.
Well, you've been active for a long time on the political scene, Eleanor. When we last spoke with you, whenever that was, a year and a half or whatever it was a while back. At any rate, we were graced to have you on the show then. But you told us about how you had begun demonstrating really very young, at a very young age, and that your mother joined you for some of the demonstrations and stuff, and you've been very active and very attuned to everything ever since. I want to mention to everybody who doesn't know, Eleanor Goldfield does through Free Speech TV airs it. It's a half-hour show every week. It's called Act Out, and it is magnificent. It's covers activists and activism of all sorts, all across the world. Actually, I've seen stuff from all over the place. And hats off to you for covering the G20 the way you did. It was a great job. And we'll talk about some of the shows that you've had. And well, are you on what now? About your 115th or 120th show?
We just aired episode 122.
Okay. I wasn't too far off. There was a big celebration for your 100th. I remember that. But that's very good. And that's you're on top of it in a very good way.
You.
So keep up the good work. I encourage you.
Thank
it's
you so
fabulous.
Much.
I actually get Act Out in my subscriptions on YouTube. I think people should know that they can go over to YouTube and find Act Out too.
Right.
A lot of folks
absolutely.
Just,
and there's also a podcast version available on Libsyn and iTunes for those who prefer podcasts.
Oh wow! Didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I never knew that either.
Well, I learn something new every day.
Well, cool. That's great.
Can you tell us something about your experience over at the G20? What was it like? What went down? I mean, it's a small and act up, but I'm trying to get you to bring it out on the show here. So,
well, I wasn't actually there, unfortunately. I wasn't able to make the trip to Hamburg. But I was able to follow it probably easier because I was in a similar time zone, being that I was in Sweden. And so I was following the events as they were happening online via Twitter and some of the media that I knew that was there. I was following their updates. So basically, I got as close to a play-by-play as one can get without actually being there, with the added benefit of being able to see what was going on at different locations around the city. And there were hundreds of thousands of people in the city at once. And I think the important thing to start off by saying is that there were a variety of events planned. Just like with J20, people like to focus on what happened with the riots. And while I think that that is an important thing to focus on and how the police retaliated, I think it's also very important to make the point that there were a variety of tactics used, from blockades, blocking people from entering the G20, which consisted of just a simple sit-in. And there were also marches, you know, students did walkouts. There was a tremendous amount of local organizing. So I think a lot of people think of these big protests as people just coming in from out of town, but that's not the case. Hamburg is a historically very radical city, and that really shone through at the G20, and they really rose up and made it very distinctly clear that they weren't just going to be used as a pawn to prove that the Germans can fall in line when Merkel wants them to.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to note that the police were brutal, not only first, because there was supposed to be a march called Welcome to Hell that was going to proceed to march towards the Red Zone, which is what, of course, ironically they call the area where the G20 is happening. They being G20, not even the protesters, they unironically call their meeting that. And the police were brutal first. They stopped the march even before it was allowed to take place, and their argument was that the people in the march were wearing masks, which is funny because the riot cops were also wearing masks, but I guess that didn't matter. So the cops were brutal first, and actually chased people down. It wasn't enough for them to just move them back. They actually chased people and beat them and tear gassed and pepper sprayed them. But this also happened to protesters who were not masked, who were simply doing sit-ins or even just doing like a simple walk down the street, weren't even necessarily part of a march. There were several reports of people being brutalized in that way, and indeed of media being brutalized by police as well.
Yeah, I saw some of that on even the larger network. Oh, geez. You get a whole different story between here and abroad as far as news.
Oh, yes, we do. Our corporate media is just, it's horrible. And that's why I watch Free Speech so much, and I do watch Rachel on occasion at MSNBC, and I do tune in on the weekends on occasion too. But you know, it's good. The more the merrier, I say, as far as media goes, because you get so many different perspectives, and I know which ones I prefer. But there are a lot. There's a lot of hidden stuff that's that we never see by network media, and there's a lot of stuff that never is covered at all, hardly. Unless you go to like Amy Goodman for Free Speech TV, she's on in the morning. She's very adept at covering a lot of important things that just get overlooked or distorted or just not ignored completely by mainstream media.
Well, there's
absolutely
there's media war going on right now. I mean, there's even a lot of my lefty buddies are upset with Amy Goodman these days too. So it's
oh yeah, well people like to pick. They like to pick at scabs all the time. You're always going to have that. And when the left fights among itself, the right always wins. We got to watch out for that. People got to get smart and keep that in mind, because when the left springs a fight, the right always manages to make it into something for beneficial for them.
Well,
I think it's important to offer up critique, and I know that a lot of several of my friends who have worked really intensely on what's going on in Syria were very disappointed in how Amy Goodman covered it. And I think that it's important to shed light on that and to demand that we work to the highest of our capability and our abilities. And I think that there's a difference between demanding that we do that and saying that, oh, that person's shit and that person's shit and this is no good anymore. And I think it's important that we do the former, not the latter, because I agree. Infighting on the left it seems to be like a favorite pastime, and it's much more important that we come to the table and say, hey, look, I think you could do better with this. What do you think I could do better with? And have it be that kind of dialogue as opposed to just writing people off for making a mistake, unless it's like, hey, I now love, the Nazis or whatever. Like, if it's something that you can work with, I think it's important that you try to work with it as opposed to just writing something off.
You know, Abby Martin has sprung forth recently with her Empire Files. It's a great show, and I've seen several of them. And she does a very good job at investigative reporting. She actually goes out there and gets her feet on the pavement like you do, Eleanor, and she finds out what the hell's going on. I saw a great report on Venezuela, and here they treat Venezuela like an odd situation, like it's everything's caused by the leftist government and all that stuff. And we know better. I knew better, but Abby Martin did a great job. She found out that these so-called food shortages aren't as bad as they are, as they're portrayed in the mainstream media. She interviewed people. She went to supermarkets. She went all over the place, and she found out that what you see on mainstream TV is not necessarily always the case. And I had suspected as much, but she put it right before my eyes, so I was very grateful to her for that. And I think she did one on Syria too, which was very good. So I missed most of that one, but I saw part of it, I think. But she's outstanding, and in the Eleanor Goldfield tradition of digging it up and putting it out there for people, you know.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. So anyway, we covered a little bit how you started getting into activist mode and all that sort of thing, and I wanted to ask you, you had a show on a few weeks back, or a month or month and a half ago, about back, you were slamming the Democrats, with good reason, because the corporatist faction of that party has absolutely, it cost their party the election last time around, I believe, and also they're still trying to dominate it. I see some hope. Tom Perez has made some noise about, you know, reenacting the 50-state strategy and all that stuff, which I think was foolish to abandon. But at any rate, and I don't know if it's because of my congressperson's influence in the background there, but he's very good, too. He narrowly was defeated by Perez for that Democratic National Committee post. But at any rate, they have got a long way to go, because Trump did manage to get a lot of traditional Democratic Union type voters, and that was that's the reason that son of a bitch is sitting in the White House right now. He's absolutely worthless, and he's you know, it's a thrill a minute with that. This is a disaster a minute with that guy. Now he's just fired Reince Priebus. He's got a mafia talking kind of Scaramucci guy that's in there. This guy, he never fails to amaze.
I have a question for you, Eleanor. I saw the numbers last week on. I was watching Doc Matt. Oh yeah, but she came up with some interesting numbers. In I guess it was 2008 or nine. It was 2009 that the Freedom Caucus. That they call in
Tea Party.
Yeah, well, made all of their advances by acting up and, you know, going to all the different offices and screaming like people have been doing through indivisible groups and such with the healthcare situation. But she put it that this is just what's happened in the last year, since it hasn't been since the 1800s, that we've had so many qualified enough signatures and $5,000 to sign up. I'm losing my
train of thought.
Yeah, not train of thought, but basically there are thousands of people, and I think this is due a lot to Bernie, who have who are running for blue seats, Democratic office.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, Eleanor, are you seeing any of that from your viewpoint on the line on the street? All of these people who are saying, "Oh, that I'm running." I mean, I'm seeing it around me down here in South Florida.
Progressives?
Yeah. It's,
oh, great.
The number of, well, the Tea Party had, like, you know, hundreds of people apply, and then these, you know, Anyaks got in. But my point is, that there haven't been, it's thousands and thousands, you know, like 30,000 people in offices, small and large, nationally, have met the criteria to enlist themselves as candidates as Democrats in the for the Democrat seat. And are you seeing that, any of that, from the perspective of activism that, you know, that is the constant walk there? You know where I'm coming from, right?
I mean, are you saying, am I seeing people in office or?
No, are you
vying for office?
You know, that have been active and the ones who show up the most, do you know what I mean? I know you're all over the place with different actions. But are you seeing it from your crowd of people who are constantly involved in the struggle that way, actively, that are part of these numbers?
I mean, I know of some people that have run for office, yes. but I think that people are also, I mean, I guess that the short answer to your question is yes, that I know of people that have gone from occupying streets to trying to occupy office, but I think that there are inherent problems with our electoral system, and between the two-party duopoly, which is really a monopoly, that and the hurdles in place, not least of all the signature crap, and but also the tampering with the voting system.
Oh, the disenfranchisement is just
that,
terrible.
Yeah, and the fact that you know, when I was in California, only 13% of eligible voters voted in the midterm election. Voting is not something that is considered helpful in this country, and I see both sides of that argument. I usually tell people that they should vote because it's like using your blinker on your car. It doesn't always matter. And to be honest, right now, it doesn't matter. Because even though, for example, Hillary won the popular vote, I don't like Hillary, but a popular vote is a popular vote. The Electoral College is basically an authoritarian piece to keep the people in line. just like the Supreme Court. Why don't we elect the highest judges in the land? It's absurd.
I call it the extreme court.
So the idea that you should vote just because it's good to practice, just like using your blinker, and at some point it will matter. It matters a great deal on local elections, but we're taught purposefully to not vote in local elections. We're not taught that those are the most important, that those can really sway our day-to-day much more than a presidential election. I think we're purposefully taught that those are not as important because they do mean more and we can make more of a difference. If people, 90% of people voted in their local elections, this country would look entirely different than it does today. And so I think when it comes to the electoral system, I don't really put a lot of faith in it. I move more towards the idea of becoming ungovernable and building alternatives as opposed to just resisting, because the resisting, you're always on your heels, you're always doing a reactionary move as opposed to actually doing something proactive.
Yeah.
So I think we
very
can
well
start
stated.
To, we can start Thank to build things without waiting for government. Of course, yeah, there are things that are always going to be problematic, like wars and, you know, like the healthcare system obviously would help to have healthcare for all. However, you can start building things like what we've seen after disasters, you know, like Occupy Sandy was a big thing after Hurricane Sandy in New York, and communities really came together and built and took care of each other because the local governments didn't do shit.
Yeah,
so I think
and you know another
hit.
Thing too that comes to mind, Eleanor, is the Next System project. Movements like that are they're springing up and they're really incredibly visionary and they're very beneficial for everybody. And we're trying our best to popularize that sort of thing too.
Yeah, I've had them on the show. That's a great initiative, and I think it's important that we start, because if you look historically, every time a system falls, the one that is built in the ashes is somewhat similar to what fell, because in times of extreme shock and in times of extreme turmoil, human beings want to feel some sort of, they want to feel safe in some way. And what's
something
safer
familiar.
Than rebuilding, exactly, something familiar. And so what's safer and more familiar than rebuilding the old system, but in your own vision? The problem with that is that rebuilding capitalism, the ashes of capitalism, will be in a lot of ways much more dangerous than capitalism was itself. So we have to start building alternatives right now, which is, you know, what the Next System Project is, what, you know, what's going on in Rojava is all about, what the roots of autonomous resistance is, what a lot of these sort of collectives are all about is creating an alternative. Fuck what the government is doing at the moment, because they're so far gone. For a lot of people, they feel that their energy is better suited building an alternative rather than trying to constantly chase after this beast of capitalism as it stumbles and eventually falls.
That's why the Next System Project in particular is so big on co-ops, and they're starting to get some traction there, and that's a good move, because, you know, let's face it, the duopoly, as you call it, they're all bought out. In varying degrees, they're bought out as hell, and that's why nothing gets done. Because the guy that controls the money bag doesn't want anything done.
Yeah.
It's strange to note that, I mean, things are happening pretty quickly on sort of a world stage at this moment, but it's been there all along. And when you suggest, quite historically correct, that people grasp onto whatever leadership is available to comfort them from their fear. I wonder, how does new system building take hold, especially right now while the opportunity is available? What's going on out there that you can say right now to people, look this up, get involved, get to know it, work with it? Is Is there any main pole that people can cling to?
Well, I think that varies, you know, and I think the important thing is to act locally and think globally. I know that's cliche, but it's very true, because what you see happening, for example, in Camp White Pine, which is in Pennsylvania, is a tremendous example of anarchist flat structure community building based around it is an emergency. They're trying to stop a pipeline from going through, and the impetus for their community building was this pipeline. But instead of just resisting the pipeline, instead of just being reactionary, they took that moment to say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to build this sort of community around this and use this as a blueprint to create an alternative, which is amazing. And it's sort of it's a small microcosm of what you see happening in northern Syria with the Rojava revolution there. So I think, there are so many examples of what's going on, of ways to build your community. But I think the important thing is to take that initiative, you know, jump into your local organizing. In this internet age, it isn't that difficult to find out what's going on in your community. You know, like D.C. has a website called the Washington Peace Center, and there you can find events that are happening around the district. Like, oh, there's a Black Lives Matter meeting. Okay, well, then volunteer for that. Oh, there's a carbon pricing meeting. Go to that and see what that's all about. Like, it's pretty easy to get plugged in. And once you are plugged in, then this sort of community structure and this sort of community building can start to form. And I think, you know, I was at a hearing or at a motion to dismiss all charges for J20 RSDs on Thursday, and there were several leaders of different organizations in the district that came to show their solidarity. And that sort of work is really powerful and really fantastic to see, because it means that, oh, we're in touch with each other. You know, the person who's in charge of this organization knows what that other person is doing. We're in touch, and that shows a united front, which is necessary. And that's really the only thing that you can do in a situation like this, is sort of build a united front that both builds and is ready to resist and to fight. So I think you see examples of it, and it might even be happening in your town or city, and you might not even know about it. So I think it's, you know, if you know of, like, that's an underground bookstore, like, go there and just strike up a conversation with the person behind the counter. Like, it probably isn't that hard to find in your community or city, particularly now, because one of the things that I've noticed as an activist and as somebody who does activist trainings and things, a lot of people have plugged into this movement network and are asking questions about how they can get involved. So it's not, you know, it's not like this, we're not like the Jesuits, you know, it's like we don't have like this highly secretive, I mean, it's secretive on some levels, but we're not, you know, you don't have to like kill a goat or anything to be in like in the society. It's pretty easy to find us, like, you know, activists walk among you. We're just regular people. So, and I think that that's another thing that's really important to highlight, is that activists are not, there was actually a great article about this a while back, that activism is not something, it's not like I'm a doctor. It's not like I had to go to school for it. I just gave a shit. And then I started acting.
Yeah, and you keep your eyes open and you try and get all the information you can and share it with people you talk to, and pretty soon you're on top of it, you know?
So I think this idea of, like, how do I get plugged in? And, oh, my God, I don't know how to start this, like, community building. I agree it's very daunting. But the bottom line is that, like, there are people doing it probably. And if there aren't, then what better person to start than you, you know, in your community or in your town? So I think it doesn't have to be this, like, daunting task of, like, oh, I don't know how to be an activist. Yeah, you do. You already know that you give a shit about certain things, whether that be your cat or fracking. So just take that giving a shit and, oh, there you go. You're an activist now, as soon as you act on that giving a shit.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Eleanor. I'm down here. There's been a lot of activism, a lot of people gathering together, a lot of women. There's been a lot of women. I'm a little bit north of where I was a year ago, and I'm in where you might call red country. But there are a lot of women who have had it. And it's been, I will say, that the indivisible groups that popped up, there are like three of them in the area that have kept pretty much together. The trouble is, though, sometimes when you get a group together, as you say, they look for where the leadership is and where a power structure is to get things done, and unfortunately will yield oftentimes to, you know, the duopoly, as you put it. And while there's actually good people in office already who might belong to a certain party.
Keith Ellison's one of them. He's a great guy. I'm glad he's my congressperson. I'm very lucky.
But, you know, and we're all, the other thing that's important too is as you say, Eleanor, just giving a damn and speaking out is a whole lot. And when people show up at their congresspeople and senators' offices, I mean statewide, not so much national, but statewide, things shift. Things do get shifted. Because,
and, you know, we need look no further than the example set by the current very reactionary Republican Party, how they swooped out of nowhere. They were nearly completely gone not terribly long ago, and they had an amazing resurgence. And the reason is what they've done is they've keyed on several things. They've keyed on local elections. They've dominated state houses like mad, city councils, school boards, you name it, local activity. And they're just swarming all over those. They're dominating state houses. They're dominating governorships, and you know they're dominating the gerrymandering because it's their representatives that they've elected that they've been very successful in electing that are drawing these insane boundaries. I know in the state of Minnesota here, we've got a very Republican district. It's weird. It looks like something a demented doctor would have drawn up I don't know what he would do it for, but it just doesn't make sense. It makes no sense. It's just designed to elect as many Republicans as possible, and it was Michelle Bachmann's old district. That's how she got elected.
Well, I think the other thing that's important to highlight is that, I mean, gerrymandering is definitely a problem, but Democrats do that too. And I don't think anybody should fucking do it. It's absurd. But I also think that the biggest problem with let me preface this by saying that I think both parties are up to their necks in corporate shit, and I wouldn't vote for either one if my life depended on it. But I think it's important to note that the Republicans, what they've done, Greg Palast, who's an investigative reporter, did a great film about this, Interstate Crosscheck. And that is really the power, that's like the power move that the Republicans have. They literally wipe millions of people off the voter rolls. And then, I mean, and it's interesting that the Democrats wouldn't use that to say, oh my God, look what the Republicans are doing. And it's because the Democrats cheat too. They don't want to bring attention to cheating because then they'd have to be like, well, we cheat too.
Yeah,
but the Republicans are much more overt about it and much more openly racist and
look at Chris Kobach. He's a guy that pioneered that in Kansas, and he has access to all kinds of voter names that he has no business having access to. These guys are criminals. Let's face it, they're anti-democracy criminals.
Eleanor, you just made a statement that I can relate something about in groups of especially women who have who have been getting together in small groups down here, and I'm on what they call the Treasure Coast now of Florida, a little bit north of South Florida, across from Lake Okeechobee. It's a very red area, but the women are getting together, and women of color, all kinds of women getting together. But here's where a social issue is getting in the way. Not getting in the way, it's a conversation that needs to be had. But I find myself when I'm involved in these groups, I tend to gravitate towards the women of color because their values and ideals seem to be as outspoken maybe as mine. But there's an issue there too, because we have a conversation that's never really been fully brought to the surface of racism, and that's going on. That's part of it.
Oh, it's rampant.
And when you want to get together, and I'm asking you from the standpoint of being such a furious activist. I don't mean furious mad, but furiously busy activist. When you have groups of people who go to work every day and they're coming out, you know, a teacher, a nurse, somebody who works at the counter at the gas station, all of these women getting together, and they all have the same objectives in mind, and yet they get in one big room and there's a collective of colors, and the women of color tend to, you know, have more, okay, let's get down to it, radical ideas perhaps than white women who are afraid maybe to
yeah.
go too far.
Well, I think it's, and I've noticed this too, I've noticed it with Muslim women comrades as well, or immigrant women. I think the, and I actually, I asked this of Dilar Dirik, who's a Syrian writer and activist, and I asked her if she thinks that some of our apathy, because my theory was that some of our apathy has to do with the fact that we don't have ISIS on our back doorstep. There's a certain level of comfort, and historically, and of course still to this day, as the system is very racist today as well, white women tend to be more comfortable. I mean, when Hillary was doing her campaign, you heard a lot about this idea of white feminism and white or elite feminism. And that was the idea that we as women are very comfortable. The only things that we have left to fight for are maybe some maternity leave and maybe, you know, a little bit more equal pay, but not that big of a deal. It's okay. We can talk about it later. That's sort of like elitist. We've won. Meanwhile,
mm-hmm.
black women, immigrant
yeah.
women, Muslim women are thrown to the wolves, and white women tend to have this sort of like comfort feeling like, oh, we did that shit in the 70s. We're all good now. So I think that the reason that black women, immigrant women, Muslim women tend to be more willing to say, let's just get shit done, is because they realize there's more of an urgency there. They really
mm-hmm.
are being oppressed at a much higher rate consistently.
Yeah.
I mean, even like in D.C., you hear about what's happening in black neighborhoods. Like cops very frequently just jump out and start harassing, if not beating people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are far more cases of police brutality in those neighborhoods. And meanwhile, if you look at the white neighborhoods, they hear about police brutality like it's like, oh, I heard about that. Like it's some, you know, fairy tale that you tell around the campfire. So
yeah.
I think the reason is that, like, still to this day, white people tend to be more removed from the immediacy of these issues, whether that be police brutality or the fact that
yeah.
white neighborhoods are typically away from dirty energy projects.
Well, I don't
want to
single out the police, but they are very, very active in oppression of black people. Philando Castile is one name that comes to mind. Rodney King before him. It's happening all over the place, and it's going at a record pace, and it's
right.
very
and
bad, and it's got to stop.
That's the reason that what I was going to say to wrap that up was that, you know, regardless of the issue, people of color and immigrants and Muslims tend to be on the forefront of getting the brunt of the negative
right.
effects of those issues far more than white people are. And so I think that's
right.
the other reason that a lot of times people say that, you know, if we're coming together to organize, let black women lead, let immigrant women lead, because they know on a much more personal experience level what they are fighting, as opposed
yeah.
to most white women or men who hear it kind of like through the grapevine. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that white people have never been oppressed. You know, the system is is first a system of oppression and hierarchy. It just so happens that they built that oppression, that system of oppression and hierarchy, along race lines and gender lines. But that certainly doesn't mean that a white person has never experienced the wrath of the oil industry or of a cop have you. But it is important to recognize, like you said, Gwen, that typically in the history of activism in this country, it's been black women, immigrant women that have led the charge because they feel that urgency a lot more.
Good point. You know, another thought comes to mind, too, and I've talked about this many times over the past few years. This nation, we are addicted to entertainment. If we don't see something that we like and is fun and amusing and comedic in nature, we turn it off right away. It's unbelievable. We don't want to digest serious stuff. We don't want to think about it. We just want to be babied with materialistic-based entertainment nonsense, you know. And we've got to adjust our attitudes big time.
Well, I'm seeing a difference in that because, I mean, I live in, you know, the boys across the street sit in a garage with the Stars and Bars in the background, guys, okay?
Yeah.
You know, we have our words, but I remain a lady and they're scared shitless of
them.
But my next-door neighbor was a retired man from New York State who was a civil servant, who was also, you know, as Mother would have said, dumber than a New York Democrat, because he was.
Mm-hmm.
When Trump won, he put his house on the market and moved to Costa Rica.
Wow.
he was pure a Irish-American Catholic, white, liberal. And he said, no. Gone too far, scaring the shit out of me. I'm gone. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I can't stand what I see. He was here recently to pick up the rest of his stuff. Loves Costa Rica. The point about the police too. I take a look. I mean, my nephew, who I'm very proud of, is a first responder. He's just spent his first week as firefighter, paramedic in West Palm Beach. But I drove a cab in West Palm for a couple of years to make extra cash. I'm going to tell you what, there are as many African-American police officers as there are white in many urban areas, but there's no white, no black, it's all blue. Do you see what I'm saying? I've seen this too.
I asked one of my guests, Keely Niyashi, who's a former Black Panther, this thing of using black bodies for white supremacy and white systems of hierarchy and oppression. And you know, Cornel West called Obama the black poster child of Wall Street. And another one of my guests pointed out, and she's a writer for Black Agenda Report, she pointed out that she was not in favor of having a black president because she said what is required of a black man to do to become president is that he release his ties from his people and his community, and so I don't want a black president. And that's the same thing with becoming a cop. You know, I've seen black cops line up at Black Lives Matter protests. They put them out there on purpose because they want to feign some sort of we're with you right before they pepper spray you. The problem isn't that, you know, I mean, black people are just as capable of being assholes and being programmed by the state. And just because you have a black person or you have a woman or you have a Hispanic man or a Hispanic woman doesn't mean that they are automatically a great choice. Just like
right.
people said, oh, I'm going to vote for Hillary because she's a woman. The problem isn't that she has or doesn't have a vagina. The quality of woman matters because the quality of president matters. And it's the same thing with police. And it's that idea that just because you have a black cop, he or she is going to be better and nicer. That's not necessarily at all the case. They could be just as brutal because they're programmed by the same system that pushes this sort of brutal paradigm.
Yeah. I guess the best thing for us to all do is just keep pushing forward. That's all we can do. And just keep at it, keep at it, and keep chipping away at that big brick wall. And hopefully once in a while a little pebble will fall off it. That's all we can do. And the more we do it and the more people do it, the more we're going to start to see some good results. And that's why I'm committed to it. I know Gwen is. I know Wayne is. I know you are, Eleanor. And I think that's the best advice we can give anybody.
You know, I gotta say that I remember the day after the election. Man, you could go to the grocery store and you could look in people's eyes and you knew who they voted for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was tragic. It was very tragic. I've seen this shift happening. And in places like, you know, I go, the green market is something that's only open on Sunday. I go over to the Publix, which is the local grocery store. You do business with other than, you know, I'm not going to Walmart kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of what I guess you might call suburban people in there. And yet I am seeing conversations just at checkout counters with the checkout people and the people they're serving, all are having the same idea in a conversation of we can't let this go on. And it's all about losing their health care, or it's some political conversation. It's
sure.
Often there every time. So that has changed. Something is shifting.
That's a good thing, Gwen. And, you know, I think, I hate to say it, but I think that's the only thing we can thank Trump for, and these reactionary Republicans, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and the rest of those yahoos. We can thank them for that, because they've finally opened up enough, or hopefully enough people's eyes to realize that there are some radically bad things happening in capitalism and in preserving the status quo. So it takes a long time. Building a movement takes forever. Look how long it took the civil rights movement to gain any ground. You know, it's not something you can do overnight. You get an idea, you work on it, you talk to people, you popularize stuff, and pretty soon, if you work hard enough and long enough, eventually you do see some results, and that's what we've got to keep on doing.
Well,
you agree?
That's right, Jack. That took at least a couple decades to get where
exactly.
Finally,
well, yes.
Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill. That
very
was
true.
Really started back in the 50s, even 40s.
That's very true.
But I do want to interject here that things are happening quicker. We live a faster life. We're instantly connected to one another. And I was so impressed with the title of Eleanor's book, Paradigm Law.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, hey, you guys know me. I was in Harmonic Convergence. That's my gig. That's what I do first. I mean, that's who I am. And paradigm shift has been something I've spoken about and taught about
in this
country and abroad for, God, almost 30 years. Oh, my God. But when I when I looked at the title of Eleanor's book, I went, oh, my God. I sat down hard, because there is a shift happening, but what is the paradigm? And that's what I wanted to ask you, Eleanor, because it is paradigm loss, but it's the radical versus visuals for the shift. And I want to ask you, what is the shift? What is happening out there? Is there a shift going on? That's my question to you. Do you see a shift?
Well, yeah, you mentioned it as well. there's definitely, but there's always shifts. You know, people, and I've said this too. It's you know, people have to come to it on their own. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't, you know, urge them to come over to logic and the search for truth and knowledge. But people have to shift on their own. So the book is really a way of inviting them to shift, as opposed to throwing facts at them and yelling at them and trying to get them to understand who's right and who's wrong. So I think, you know, there's always a shift happening, and it will continue to happen. The question is just whether we can have, if we have the time, and in that time that we have, because, you know, humans are simply doing and etch-a-sketching their revolutions and their systems for a long time. It's just that climate change has made it so that we don't have the luxury of continuous redos anymore. So
right. Eleanor, tell people where they can get your book.
There's like a lot of echo, which I don't know if it's a little
jarring
to me.
It happens.
But what I was going to say is that we don't have the time of endless redos, so the question is just whether we can make that shift in the time that we have, or whether we are going to see the intense fall of capitalism and thereby probably an intense fall of the population before we have our shit together. So the book is just a small little invitation for people to begin that shift and start asking the questions that need to be asked.
Good point. And tell people where they can get your book, Eleanor.
You can go on to my website at artkillingapathy.com, and it's available there.
Great.
And there's also a list. If you go to artkillingapathy.com/performance, you can see where I will be performing spoken word from the book as well.
Have you got a lot of dates set up?
At the moment, I have 4, and more are being added. So I have LA, New York, DC, and San Francisco at the moment.
You really need to get to South Florida, darling.
And to Minneapolis.
I'm allergic to Florida. I have bad memories of trips there, but if I have to go, then I will try to make it to wherever you are.
That's very gracious. It's a classy answer, darling. I see you're allergic to Florida. I don't blame you. in L.A., where will you be at?
In L.A., it'll be this coming weekend, August 5th. I'll be at The Hive, which is a gallery downtown. There will be some amazing artists, actually artists that are in the book as well, including Abby Martin, Recycled Propaganda, will be showing there. So artists that are included in the book will be showing their art at this gallery, and I will be performing some spoken word as well.
And how about Rooftop Revolutionaries? Where are they appearing next?
They are not. They are relegated to the beautiful past.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
No, it's okay.
Stuff happens, you know, in music, stuff happens.
It does.
And where will you be in New York, Eleanor?
In New York, I'll be at a place called Blue Stockings. It's a bookstore and activist cafe.
I know that. Okay. Is there anything coming up that, other than that, that you would like to put out? We do go to podcasts over and get some listen-ins.
In D.C., I have my my big event here on September 2nd at the Lookout and Adams Morgan. That information is also online. I'll be performing. There will be music performances as well. Lee Camp will be performing. And then on October 7th, I'll be at Adobe Books in San Francisco. And I'm adding more dates as much as I can. So, and also if you have suggestions on, if anybody has suggestions on solutions, they can contact me as well. Basically looking for alternative, radical, anarchist bookstores, coffee shops, etc. Please don't send me something that says, like, please come to the DNC convention or something. So, if you have suggestions that are on the alternative radical tip, then I am very open to it as well.
I wish you great fortunate luck with all of this, because it just, not so much fortune in those ways, but fortune in getting the message out. And having the ease and ability to get where you need to go with the support you need, because that's the gig.
and making an impact. You already do, but I mean really make an impact.
Thank you so much. Well, I really appreciate you guys helping to spread the word via your podcast.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. It really is.
Yeah, it's our pleasure to have you on. And thank you so much for the book. It's something it's something I'll be able to pick up. I keep Leaves of Grass by my bed in case I can't sleep. And I can see where Paradigm Lost is probably going to sit next to it or on top of it. So
I'm honored to have that place. Thank you.
I can't say enough about it. I've been bragging on it over there at Round 37 on Facebook all day. Thank you for being with us. We are down to the last couple minutes. If there's anything else that you would like to get out there, please take a moment to put it out.
No, I mean, the only thing, again, is that, you know, outside of the book, the spoken word from the book is born from my TV show, Act Out, which airs online and on Free Speech TV every week. And so you can go to occupy.com/act out for more information and to see episodes. Where you can, we post frequently on Facebook and on Twitter. So the Facebook is just Facebook/act out on Occupy. So, you know, feel free to go there and plug in. We have some amazing guests on every week and try to cover what corporate media would never want to cover. So, please check us out there.
Well, you're always relevant. You always have great things to say, and you're always very topical and very informative, Eleanor. So I've got to tip my hat to you on that one. Great job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's just been a pleasure, and we're so glad to have you on the show again. And we'll have to do it again from time to time and make it kind of a good habit.
It's always a pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome, dear. Very, very welcome. You keep up the good work. I know you will, but we're going to try and pick up the pieces and do the same thing here.
Well, thank you, guys, and thank you for all that you do.
Yeah, thank you, too, definitely.
Well, I'll close the show down with a bit of a quote here. It's very short, but I like it very much, from Activist Is As Activist Does.
Uh-huh.
Go on, take the bait. There are some confrontations worth making. So, excellent advice. Thank you, Eleanor, for being with us.
Yes,
tonight.
Thank you, Eleanor. And I want to remind everybody to keep pushing forward. You can find my writing at the Saturday Afternoon Post, Jack Jodell. And you can find Wayne Johnson's writing at the Lives and Times of F. Wayne Johnson. And keep tuning into the radio program every Sunday at this time, and you'll be abreast of all the latest and greatest happenings. So thanks, Gwen. Thank you, Eleanor.
Very good. Good night, all.
Yep. See you next week.
The show has been sponsored by DaughtersOfIsis.com. The fragrant memories of our ancestors. Please come on by and...